Hi, we're here today with Scott Ramsey from Year in the Wild, and he's going to tell us a little bit more about his project. Thank you so much for joining us, Scott.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
And with us as well is Gerard, who's not familiar with Year in the Wild. I've spoken to Scott about it before. So we're just going to start with a little bit of an introduction about the project and how long it's been running and what exactly it's about. So if you could just tell us a little bit about how it got started, where the idea came from, and what it's grown to.
Sure. I work as a photographer and a writer, and I focus on protected areas in Southern Africa. So my beat is very much about conservation and the nature reserves and national parks of the region.
Mm.
And I've always had this dream to travel to all the wilderness areas of Southern Africa, actually all of Africa, but Africa's a pretty big place. So I thought I'd start with Southern Africa. Even Southern Africa is a big place. So I thought I'd start with South Africa, and that's where I come from. It's my home country. And I've always wanted to explore my home country properly to be able to say this is my home.
Mm.
I can tell people about it. And of course, with my love for wilderness and conservation and nature, the national parks of South Africa were a logical place to start. So I approached South African national parks about doing a project where I went to all of them and I would take photos, write a blog, write articles, and generally inspire other people as well to get excited about them.
Mm.
And one of the things that I feel strongly about is that everyone in this country knows their national parks.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can get someone in Cape Town to understand what Mapungubwe is, or even just to pronounce the name Mapungubwe properly, then I think I've done my job. So the first project I did was in 2011 and 2012, where I went to about 40 different protected areas, not just national parks, but also some of the provincial reserves.
And all just in SA.
All just in South Africa, exactly. A lot of the special nature reserves are not national parks.
Mm.
So I wanted to do the most special wilderness areas and national parks and nature reserves. So I've included a lot of the provincial reserves. And that project went really well. And my sponsors were really happy.
Mm.
I've had good support from Ford and Goodyear and Cape Union Mott. And they said, okay, well, what are you doing next? And I was like, well, I'll do something similar again. So I'm doing a lot of the same national parks now, but in different seasons,
okay.
Very different places in different seasons. Kalahari in wintertime is a completely different place to summertime. And I'm also doing the Transfrontier Parks on the borders of the country. So going into southern Namibia, into southern Botswana, Mozambique and Zimbabwe.
You did one of those recently, eh?
Yeah, I was in Kalahari in the Transfrontier Park there in the Botswana side, which is huge. It's three times as big as the South African side.
Mm.
Whole park together is 1.5 times the size of Kruger, so it's
sure,
massive.
Yeah.
And I've also done Ice National Park in southern Namibia, which is linked to Richtersveld. And yes, so it's about a project and a life and a journey which sees me traveling for about 10 months of every year, telling the stories of these places and sharing it online and in magazines and newspapers.
And looking back at the first year, what were some of the most inspiring places you visited or unexpectedly beautiful and kind of lesser known?
Sure. Everyone asks me which is my favorite park. I can't tell them because they're all so different. The region's very diverse. You know, you've got all the way from the deserts in the west to the tropics in the east. And South Africa is the third most biodiverse country on earth after Brazil and Indonesia. So every park is different. Every park's got its own flavor. But there are a couple that stand out for me, mostly for personal reasons. The Richtersveld National Park and an Ice National Park in southern Namibia. Beautiful desert mountains, very sparsely populated, very few visitors as well sometimes because it gets so hot in summer. It's very rugged and it's got a beautiful light about the area. So for photography, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really lovely to photograph. And it's a unique landscape, those desert mountains with the Orange River flowing through it.
Yes.
I've been there a few times, sometimes on my own, not for work, just to go, and it's always been a very, very close to my heart. All the way on the other side of the country, Isimangaliso Wetland Park. It's very different, obviously. It's tropical. Love it for different reasons. It's got the most number of animal species of any protected area in Africa because of the marine component and the coral reefs, and then also on land you've got bushveld, you've got forested dunes.
That does have a nice combination of bush and beach, I think,
exactly.
That you don't find many places.
Exactly, yeah. So that's special for me, and I think it's a very important protected area. And then, you know, several small ones like Umkhambati Nature Reserve, which is on the northern wild coast of South Africa. It's probably the least developed part of the wild coast. A lot of that eastern Cape coastline has been very developed. And so the Mkambati is very important from that perspective, and it's also a hotspot for plant diversity.
Mm.
So, and it's beautiful. It's probably one of the last places where you can see eland walking on the beaches.
Oh, wow.
You know, you have
that's awesome.
It's spectacular, pristine coastline with coves and beaches and rivers which flow directly into the sea, and you can drink straight out of the rivers. And in South Africa these days, that's unheard of. You know, you can't drink out of every river you see. So, yeah, those are probably my favorite ones. But I've just been to the Galagadi in summertime, which was very hot.
Must have been hot.
Yeah, 40 degrees plus every day. But I absolutely loved it because it's much more life. The thunderstorms, it's raining. The insect life is great. All the springbok lambs are being born. And yeah, it's just a very beautiful time of year. I prefer it to winter time, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Summertime, even though it's hotter, there's more life. So it's very hard to say which is my favorite, but yeah, those are certainly some of the better ones.
And ones that you think are worth promoting and not enough people know about, any of those stand out?
Sure. I think a place like Mapungubwe, not many people know about it. It's on the border of Botswana and Zimbabwe, right in the north near Messina. Mm. It's a spectacularly beautiful place, but culturally it's a very important place for a lot of local people in Limpopo and actually in Botswana and in Zimbabwe. It was the site of the oldest formal civilization in southern Africa, the Mapungubwe Kingdom, dating back to about 1200 AD. Sure. And it's the precursor to Great Zimbabwe. So you've got a lot of archaeological excavations there, and it's become a very important place culturally for South Africa. Mm. So, and it's a beautiful place. There's Big Five there. I think there's Big Five. I think there's buffalo there. I'm not sure. I stand to be corrected, but there's otherwise the rest of the Big Five. And it's just a big landscape, you know, lots of baobab trees, endless views, very dry and dusty. And you know, it's, for me, probably the most quintessential African reserve in Southern Africa in terms of the landscape. You know, when you think bushveld and you think baobab trees and big skies and dry and dusty and
typical African
elephants,
kind of vibe.
Mapungubwe and the Transfrontier Park, which extends into Tuli Block in Botswana and a bit into Zimbabwe with the Marimani community. That's, for me, you know, a very special place. And then there are a couple of smaller reserves like Kuchelberg, which is near Cape Town. You know, it's fynbos and mountains.
Mm.
It's tiny, but it's exceptionally beautiful. And it's got the most number of plant species per hectare of any place in the world.
Wow.
Even more so than the rainforest. They've got something like over 1,000 species in 70 square kilometers.
Yeah.
It's high diversity, very beautiful.
Mm.
Not many people know about it. A couple of locals are really, you know, passionate about it. But that's the sort of place that, you know, more people can know about. And then maybe one other I would say is a place like Marikele National Park in the Waterberg, or Mokala National Park in near Kimberley. Those are small reserves that are getting bigger, they're newer reserves, but they play an important role in conserving each of their biomes that they're in. And there's so many. I could go on all day, but those are probably some of the better ones too, for people who don't know to go to.
Yes. And the state of the parks in general, quite good?
Depends which organization. South African National Parks are doing an exceptional job of making the organization sustainable financially.
Mm.
A lot of people complain about the fact that Kruger's getting overdeveloped or there are too many tourists, etc. The fact of the matter is, if they don't generate money through tourism, the parks will be shut down because every year they're getting less and less money from national government.
Mm.
Currently, they're getting about 12% of their conservation budget from the national government. That's being reduced every year. It's wrong. National government should be supporting conservation and the national parks much more than they are. That's a debate for another time. So national parks themselves have said, okay, well, we have to generate revenue through tourism. It's the only possible way we can sustain ourselves. And so they're doing an exceptionally good job, and they're very professional. And on the whole, I think they run the best conservation parks organization in Africa. And they're doing a fantastic, fantastic job. I admire them for doing it. So I think, when everyone complains about the hotels going up in Kruger, I think we need to remember that if we don't generate money through tourism, a lot of these parks are going to just be shut down and converted to farms and mines and things like
that. It is kind of a necessary evil. I mean, it's not ideal to have the hotels there, but what do you do?
Exactly.
They need to sustain themselves.
It's a
difficult situation.
The bigger part of the tourists that actually visit the parks, are they international or South African people?
Most visitors, I think, to the parks are local.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't have the exact stats there. But I think a lot of international visitors as well. Yeah.
I often get asked by people, because we travel a lot internationally, what's the best place I've been? And I always answer, well, I love South Africa because we've got absolutely everything here. There's no need to go explore. So, and I think many people just... didn't know 90% of what Scott just mentioned.
Yes. Some of these parks, yeah, they're tiny and they're just not well known. Yeah.
Well, this is the thing, and I think 4 or 5 of the national parks out of 19 actually make money. Mm. And those 4 or 5 support and sustain the other 15 national parks around the country.
Sure.
So if it wasn't for Kruger, it wasn't for Table Mountain National Park, Addo, and I think Galagadi is profitable, a lot of those other parks would just be not viable. And we have to remember that. So in many ways, Kruger's not only just supporting Kruger. Kruger's supporting a lot of other habitats around the country, a lot of other wilderness areas around the country. I must say, though, I think there's definitely a fine line to be drawn between tourism development and maintaining a wilderness atmosphere.
Mm.
And that's definitely something that I think we do need to be careful of, where we don't compromise the wilderness atmosphere, that there are areas still remaining in the parks which are completely untouched, which are off limits to humans, and which the animals, are not in any way disturbed by human presence. I think that's critical, and so I think the national parks are mindful of that. Yeah.
And what's it been like visiting, or going across the border and visiting the other sides of these parks? Has it been quite interesting to cross the border and see it from a different side?
Yeah, I think in Namibia, the parks are doing a decent job there. I think they've got an exceptional conservation record. The Namibian Park Authorities, the Ministry of Environment and Tourism are doing a good job there. It depends on the country. I've just been into Botswana and the Galagadi, and that needs some serious work. Part of the reason I like it is because it is so undeveloped, and I don't mind that. I prefer to camp in the middle of nowhere and be self-sustaining, and carry my own water and things. But, for instance, the showers haven't been working in the Mbuyisihube Game Reserve. The water is obviously often not working. Campsites are run down, etc. It's very basic. So I don't mind that. Some people might complain. Zimbabwe, I've been to some of the parks there. Again, they're short on funds. A lot of the revenue that flows from tourism into the parks in Zimbabwe goes straight to the national government. They don't get that money back.
Sure.
So, you know, it's a political game there. And I think Mozambique, I haven't been to the Mozambique parks yet. I suspect, though, from what I've heard, that they're also very underfunded.
And wildlife on that side, I mean, virtually non-existent.
On the Mozambican side, yes, I think it's virtually non-existent, certainly on the Kruger side of Mozambique, and that National Park de Limpopo. Botswana, obviously, good wildlife in the Galagadi side, but depends on the rains. Zimbabwe, fantastic wildlife. Again, poaching is a serious issue. Yeah,
I'm sure you've come across some examples of the poaching as well.
Sure, I see it regularly in my work, especially when I'm dealing directly with the parks people and they talk to me about it. It's a major problem, certainly in the more areas which have more communities, more people living on the borders. Natal, KwaZulu-Natal, Northern Zululand, it's a major, major problem. It's one of the biggest threats to our wildlife in Africa is the need to create sustainable economies around parks so that the local communities benefit and they can see the benefits of the parks that they're living right next to. So, you know, if I had no food on the table and there was a herd of impala on the other side of the fence, I'd also probably poach one. The problem comes in when there's commercial poaching and people setting up butcheries in the parks.
Very organized operations.
Organized crime. That is the issue. That's really the problem. It's not really, you know, the odd impala being lost here and there for people who just want to put food on their plates, I've got no problem with. But it's the organized crime that's the biggest issue.
A while ago, Kingsley Holgate had this Lubombu Trail that he traveled on, and it was kind of to increase awareness on the whole rhino poaching issue as well. And while they were on the Mozambican side, they were traveling through the villages and that sort of thing. And he actually said that they were in a small village, and one of the kind of real on-the-ground poachers was handed R1 million in cash. And you think, this is a guy who lives in a tiny village. You can't comprehend the sum of money that he's just been given. And how do you prevent that kind of thing when it does offer so much opportunity for people willing to do it?
Absolutely. No, it's a challenge we've got all across Southern Africa and Africa. And again, it's down to enforcement. You know, there's got to be proper enforcement, and I'm not sure that the enforcement agencies, you know, outside of the parks are doing as much as they can given the circumstances.
Because I'm sure it's such a difficult situation. You're dealing with such a big area that it's tough to actually police. But if you look at something like Uganda or Rwanda, I think they've done such a good job in terms of turning the whole gorilla situation around and making people aware of the tourism opportunities and getting communities involved in those programs and tourism initiatives as well. And I think we need more of that.
Yeah, I absolutely think that the national government has to support it. And I'm not convinced that they are totally supportive of the efforts to stop the wildlife trade and poaching. They've got a lot of other priorities on their plate, but I believe that these places are South Africa's and Southern Africa's most important assets. You know, in 100 years' time, when the rest of the world has lost all their megafauna, we're going to have most of the world wanting to see lions and leopards and rhinos and elephants, and where they're going to come. Hopefully, they're going to come to Southern Africa, and it's a sustainable industry. It'll provide plenty of jobs over the long term. It may not provide the enormous amount of money that mining provides immediately, but once the mine is finished, what do you do with the land? It's trashed. You can't do anything with it. You can't redevelop the ecology and the ecosystem. So I think, to me, South Africa's natural heritage is its most important asset. And of course, in many ways, it supports everything else in our country. You know, the economy depends on the environment, and the environment doesn't depend on the economy. You know, if we don't get fresh water from our mountains, if we don't look after our parks, which are storehouses of biodiversity, of crop pollinators and things like that, we won't have any economy. So it's a mindset that has to change, and hopefully it is changing.
And what's the state of the wildlife, generally speaking, in the parks? Quite good?
Yes, it is. I think the parks guys are doing a really good job. I think, on the whole, the rangers on the ground are committed and passionate people, and they do it. Many of them do it for the love of it. Certainly, there's not a lot of money in it. And I think, yes, I think South Africa's parks, Namibia's parks, Botswana's parks, the wildlife is excellent. You know, some of the parks in Zimbabwe I've been to, also fantastic, fantastic wildlife. And probably in many ways, I haven't been to East Africa, but I have heard that it's very commercialized there. And I think there's some places in South Africa which are still properly wild. You can often be the only person in the whole area. I went to Mabua Sahubi recently in the Galagadi side, Botswana side of Galagadi, and I was one of two groups in the whole reserve, which is spectacular, you know. And you've got this whole place to yourself, and you think, where else in the world can you actually have this whole place to yourself where the lion's walking through camp? And
what are some of the parks that you'd recommend if someone's looking for that kind of experience? Lots of wildlife, fairly untouched, not a lot of tourists. Like, what would you recommend? What parks?
I think Galagadi in summertime is a good place to go. Not that many people.
If you can stand the heat, it's worth going.
Properly wild. Botswana side of Galagadi, you have to have a 4x4 to go in. So you know, it limits the number of tourists immediately. You've got to be completely self-sufficient. You can strike it lucky then, see lots if it's been raining. But if it's been dry, then you can also not see too many animals. I think the north of Kruger is spectacular. You know, there are only really a couple of camps in the north. A lot of people go to the south for the animals, and it can get very congested, but the north of Kruger is good. Yes, you know, I would say, you know, in some parts of Zululand, they tend to be smaller, the reserves. There are generally more tourists, but there's also a higher density of animals, so you can be lucky. A place like Ndumu Game Reserve, Tembe Elephant Reserve, which is some of the biggest elephants in Africa, biggest tuskers, and those are really good. So yes, those are the places I would recommend for getting away from and seeing lots of wildlife.
And you mentioned the 4x4ing. What parks are good if you want to kind of combine that game viewing with 4x4 driving and that sort of experience?
Richtersveld, I would say, is obviously the scenery. Not many animals. It's so dry.
But stunning. I mean, it's just one of the most magical places. Yeah. If you like that kind of desert environment.
Exactly. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Galagadi again. The jeep tracks into the Botswana side are you have to have a 4x4. a couple of other destinations where you need a 4x4. Some of the smaller reserves in the Cape are great. In the Cape Fold Mountains, like Hunkerberg, also good for 4x4ing. Yeah, those are probably the better ones for that.
And compared to or looking at something like Richtersveld, what's comparable to that? What kind of areas, what parks would you recommend are similar in that sense, where very different kind of environment, where no solitude, quiet, desert beauty?
Yeah. South Africa's parks, it's tough in a way because a lot of South Africa is very developed.
Mm.
Most of the land has been transformed in some way. So the parks are very much pockets of wilderness.
Mm.
Tankwa Karoo National Park, which is between Ceres and Kalfinia, on the border of the Western and Northern Cape. Tankwa Karoo is spectacular for that. There's lots of open space, very few people.
Mm.
It's a big park. It's 150,000 hectares now, I think. That's cool. That's nice. Namakwa National Park on the west coast. It's a nice coastal section, which is about 45 kilometers long, and you can often be the only person camping along there.
That's
nice. Where else? I would say those places have a similar wilderness feel.
So you're still busy with your second year. Well, it's not actually your second year, I suppose. Your second
project, yeah. So I'm still busy with that. I've got about 6 months to go. I've done I've done the Drakensberg, and I've done a lot of the Western Cape and the Northern Cape now, and I'm heading into the north of the country, Mapungubwe, Tulublok, and Botswana, and I'm going to end my trip at Kruger in August and December, in September, yeah.
So still quite a few months left.
About 6 months left.
Mm. It's got to be quite tough living on the road like that.
Yeah, it is. Initially, I got quite lonely, but you soon get used to that, and in many ways, it beats sitting in the office every day and sitting in traffic. So I'm not complaining, but when you do have to live, you have to look out for yourself all the time. You've got no one to sort of navigate for you or to.
So do you do a lot of traveling completely on your own?
Yes, I do a lot of traveling on my own. Sometimes friends come and join me for a day or two or a week here and there. Sometimes family members, but because I travel outside school holidays, I only travel during school term.
It's quieter, it just makes more sense. It's
difficult for people to join me sometimes, but I don't mind because a lot of the time I'm working, I'm moving around a lot, and it's not so much of a holiday. People come join me, they often go get tired pretty quickly, and I do tend to move around a lot, and I don't take weekends off or anything. So when I'm traveling, I'm working, and when I get back home, I try and relax.
I think people often think the sort of thing with our job as well is it's just a holiday, it's a paid holiday, but it's actually a lot of work. If you want to have the good pictures and...
Sure. It's a lot of early mornings, getting up just before sunrise, staying up at night to photograph the stars, interviewing people, setting up interviews with rangers and park managers, and getting from A to B is often a logistical challenge, just to get from A to B. If you're covering tough terrain and you're on your own and you've got no other backup vehicle to pull you out and if you get stuck and things like that.
Has that happened a couple of times.
Fortunate, once it was in Kakoland in northern Namibia, which was a bit worrying because it was in an area where...
That's very...
yeah. Cars only come past once every few days. Fortunately, I only had to wait 2 or 3 hours.
And wow.
Lovely group of 4x4s from Bloemfontein drive past at the
opportunity. You must have been glad to see them.
And they pulled me out of a thick sand. So, yeah, it's... That's when you have to just learn to have faith and sit back and wait for something to come along.
Mm. That's such a lovely area as well. Like one of my favorite destinations, the whole north of Namibia.
Northwestern Namibia is certainly at the top of my list for wilderness destinations, without a doubt, yes.
We once traveled on the coast to the mouth of the Kunene.
Yes.
And I think that's my favorite trip I've ever been on, because you just feel like you're on the other side of the world. There's no one around.
Absolutely. I think there's something like 60,000 people living in an area which is, I can't remember the exact size, but it's certainly one of the least populated parts of the world.
Absolutely. And any plans going forward once you're done with this trip?
Sure. My plan is to continue my work in protected areas in Southern Africa. I've done South Africa and the Transfrontier Parks now on the borders of South Africa. I would like to focus on Namibia and Botswana and some of the other wilderness areas in Zimbabwe and Mozambique.
Mm.
And so 2015 and 2016, I'll be heading further north, and certainly just carrying on the momentum that I've developed, and getting people excited about going to these places. And you know, I met a fantastic Italian couple in Kalahari recently, and they've come out to South Africa several times now. And what they do is they're seasonal workers in Italy, and they say work double shifts while they're working in Italy, and then they come out here for 3 months every year, and they just go to all the parks. Sure. And it reminded me that there are people overseas and the people around the world for whom Africa's wildlife is the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you live in South Africa or Southern Africa, you start taking it for granted.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You just become jaded because you've seen it since you're... Mm-hmm.
And it's good to be reminded how lucky we are and how privileged and special we are. We can drive in our car from here to Joburg to Kruger in 5 hours and be in a wild place with wild animals.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Where else in the world can you do that? You know? So, yes, you know, very much so. It's just trying to get... people around the world and in South Africa excited about these places and as excited about them as I am.
You mentioned that you haven't been to East Africa. Are there any of the big parks that are on your list that you really want to visit one day?
Sure. I'd love to go to Nyasa in northern Mozambique. I'd love to go to Tsavo in East Africa. Many of the East Africa parks I'd love to go to. It's, I guess, because I've grown up in South Africa and I know Botswana, Namibia, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and South Africa better, I'd rather start here and then work my way slowly further north. I'd love to go to some of the parks in Central Africa, in Rwanda and Uganda, the rainforest parks.
Yes. Mm. Such a different environment again.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a big continent. And so it could be a lifetime of work or more than several lifetimes of work. But we start where we are and then we see where we end up.
And if people want to find out a bit more about the project, where can they get more info?
Sure, I write for Leisure Wheels every month, so you can catch my articles on that. I've got my website, yearinthewild.com, and on Facebook as well, if you search on Facebook. And then I write for a couple of different websites and newspapers like Cape Times, News 24. So you can also just Google me and I'll hopefully pop up somewhere.
And you also do talks at Cape Union Mart.
Yes, I give talks about 10 talks a year at different Cape Union Mart stores around the country. They're one of my sponsors and they've been very good to me in terms of helping me with gear and covering some of my fuel expenses. And so I give talks at various stores, and generally it's about South Africa's biodiversity and the national parks and my travels through them and some of the photos that I've taken and the people that I've met. So it's really a story of my journey.
We have put those dates on our calendar on our website as well, so people can go onto our calendar and they can see where and when you'll be talking.
Fantastic.
But yeah, great. Thank you so much for sitting down and chatting with us. It's been interesting as always. And we'll have all those links on the website as well if you want to go on to yearinthewild.com.
Thanks very much for having me, guys.
Thanks.
That's good.
Cheers.
Cheers.